Tell me a little bit, Stephen, if you can, about who this fellow Hakeem is. You made reference to him a couple times.
This is, you know, the story is documented in my book. Just to make a long story brief, I have studied the subject for over 36 years now, and in my course of study, I began to investigate the academic Egyptology sources. They didn't seem adequate to me. Other sources didn't seem adequate. So then, as you mentioned, I went deep into the metaphysical mystery school tradition, which did take it back to more advanced civilizations. So in the course of my research, in around 1992, I came across a book by a woman named Murray Hope. She is a Wiccan priestess and a cult person who also is a great independent Egyptologist. She wrote a book called Ancient Egypt, the Sirius Connection. In this book, she talks about coming across an indigenous group in Egypt which kept the old ways. That really sparked my interest that there still could be an active group who kept an oral tradition alive in Egypt. I got a further confirmation from a great man named Dr. Albert Das, who is a native-born Egyptian, was a practicing psychiatrist in North Carolina. He may have passed by now. He would be in his 90s if he's alive, but I had a meeting with him in 1992. He's also a high-ranking Rosicrucian, and he confirmed to me that there was an oral tradition in Egypt. So that caused my first trip to Egypt, and it'll be 12 years this fall where I made this connection. I went to Egypt, and lo and behold, I went disguised as a tourist, and the group that I was involved with at that time was using this gentleman, Abdel Hakeem, as their guide. Now, there may be a lot of people in the audience tonight say, oh, I've been to Egypt, I know Hakeem, and he's known as Hakeem. He's a tour guide. Yes, he is a well-known tour guide for over 50 years. He's basically 74 years old now. He's basically in semi-retirement, but he still will do special things for different groups. He is known as one of the most, at one time in the 70s, 80s, and in the early 90s, he was perhaps the most popular tour guide in Egypt. But many people did not realize that the man was also Western trained. He has degrees in archaeology and Egyptology from Cairo University. He also did graduate work in archaeology at Leiden University in the Netherlands. So he has that Western background. He is trained. He's an academic Egyptologist. But he revealed himself in the early 90s, first up Abraham Clow, then to me, that he was an indigenous wisdom keeper. Now,
what's that?
Well, it's people who keep the oral tradition. Now, the oral tradition, something that we know very much in the Native American tradition, in the Tibetan tradition, in the Mayan tradition, but very few people, only in fragments, or I ever discovered this mentioned before, have realized that this tradition has existed in Egypt. And another thing that most people don't realize is that Egypt is in Africa. Most people think of Egypt in the Middle East. No, it's a country in northeastern Africa. And Egypt was the gateway to the Middle East, to Central Asia, to Far East, and to Central and South Africa. So it's always been a gateway country with different cultures and different connections always have gone through. But the tradition that Hakeem teaches, and it's his tribe, his last name, first of all, his name Abdel Hakeem in Arabic means slave or servant to wisdom. And indeed he is. And his last name, Awiyan, is an Awiyani tribe. They're known as the Eye tribe, which reflects to what people have studied as the Eye of Horus, the Eye of Ra, but also is also because they have distinctive green eyes. And I have hazel green eyes, which makes me think I'm part of this tradition. I've sort of become adopted member of his family. But his tribe has been responsible for not only keeping the history of their own tribe, but all tribes. So the wisdom keepers meant these were the people that long before there was writing, long before there were written records, this is how history
So they just talk it.
Yes,
saying.
But they do it. It's not just a matter of, you know, some people say, well, you know how that goes when you remember the old game we played in school of telephone, somebody would whisper something to someone in the first. By the time it got to the person in the last, it was totally distorted. But this is not how this is. This was a very rigorous initiatic tradition where people had to memorize these histories and had to be tested, continually initiated into learning these things. So it's a very rigorous tradition. It actually was mentioned by Alex Haley in Roots to find out about Kunta Kinte. He had to go back to Africa and talk to what the anthropologists call griot, which is a French word. The actually African word is jali. These are the tribal wisdom keepers. They keep, and they can go on for hours and hours talking about this generation and that generation. So Hakim's tradition, and he was chosen as a young boy by the female elders of his tribe because, as he teaches us, the tradition of ancient Kemet was matrilineal, matriarchal. So the women were usually the wisdom keepers, but he was a special child to his mother.
How did they change the name from Kemet to Egypt? How did that happen?
Egypt is a Greek word, based on a Greek word, Egyptos. It comes from a term, Hegypetos, which is from the ancient Kemetian term, Het-ka-pata, which means the place where Ka. Ka is a word which a lot of you guests have talked about, many different translations. Hakim said it means the physical projection of the soul or the spirit, which actually is the personality, that which attaches itself to the body. It's not the physical body, which in the ancient term was put a T to it, Kat, with a T, Kat, meant body or corpse. But Ka is like our personality. And Ptah was a creator God, a netter, which really didn't mean God, and we can talk more about Ptah later if we want to get into like an extraterrestrial thing. But Ptah, basically the term meant the place where the physical projection of Ptah manifested. Well, that was just one site, one area, which the Greeks called Memphis. The ancient term was Menifer. It was the ancient capital of the old kingdom of the original dynastic Egypt. So Egypt basically is based on the name of one town, one site. The ancient term was, but really the original term was Chem or Chem, which is where the word alchemy comes from. It's basically alchemy was the wisdom and the art of the Kemet. And it's interesting, the term is still used today because the Arabs sometimes refer to Egypt. They have different names, but one of the terms is Al-Chem. Well, this is where alchemy comes from. So the T ending is a feminine ending. When they devised language and when they broke it down to masculine and feminine, they put the T to the land, but the land is feminine. So Kemet means the black land. And that really meant the rich, dark, alluvial soil that the Nile deposits when she floods. And that's where the civilization was able to flower. They planted all their crops where they, you know, people don't realize, if you look a map of Egypt, that really what ancient Egypt was just a thin strip of green land around the Nile River, and the rest was desert. That's dynastic times. The ancient Kemet probably went from where we could say Morocco, Libya today, to the Sudan, to Nubia, all the way down to Ethiopia, maybe even to Central Africa. So what was ancient Kemet, and even probably went to Tigris-Euphrates and contained what was then ancient Sumer. So the ancient civilization of Kemet was a huge land. And
how come though that if the pyramids were standing during a period that they were built, and some catastrophe wiped out all the people, what happened to all the other buildings?
Well, see, again, as I mentioned earlier, the cataclysm did not affect northern Africa geophysically. It affected a lot of other places in the world, but what it did affect Kemet was by changing the climate. So by the severe change in climate, a lot of people did migrate out of Kemet.
But the civilization
was not destroyed.
But they had to live somewhere. What happened to their huts and their homes?
Well, interestingly enough, the living quarters that the ancient people built were not of stone. So they built their temples, they built their pyramids to be something to last, but they built their homes, thatched roofs or mud brick, and those things naturally erode.
They just decomposed, I guess.
Yes, exactly.